In 2008, social scientist David Blankenhorn testified convincingly in support of California's Proposition 8, a proposed constitutional amendment restricting marriage to one man and one woman. Having founded the influential Institute for American Values several decades prior to that trial, Blankenhorn raised many eyebrows last year when he publicly changed his position on marriage equality, insisting that the time has come for removing the issue from its status as fodder in this country's culture wars and instead build alliances among gay and straight couples to strengthen the institution of marriage itself. Now, there have been other such reversals. David Blankenhorn, however, has gone much further than just writing in the New York Times an op-ed column. In the intervening months, he has harnessed the resources of the Institute for American Values to refine both the theoretical and the practical aspects of this position and assembled a distinguished list of signatories to a statement calling for a new conversation on the subject. Now, this approach holds great promise for moving the nation beyond the current stalemate on marriage, and I am very pleased to be able to welcome David Blankenhorn now to State of Belief Radio. Hello, David.
Hey, how you doing today?
Listen, I am so proud of what you've done, and we'll talk about it now, but I'm another on that list of people who changed their minds about this whole issue, and so I'm so eager to get insights from you and share those with our listeners. Your testimony, David, in Perry versus Schwarzenegger, the Prop 8 case, was both thoughtful and nuanced, because I believe that many well-meaning people continue to hold views similar to those that you presented at that time. I wonder if you would mind just starting with a very quick summary of where you were coming from in 2008.
Sure. I argued in my testimony that the main purpose of marriage in our history as a species, really, on Earth, I mean, the main reason the institution evolved and came into being in the first place was so that society could establish what the scholars call filiation, and that just means who are the parents of this child.
Mm-hmm.
So that we want a society where every child who is born, our ideal is to have that child be cared for and raised and loved by the two individuals, the mother and the father, whose sexual union produced the child. That's
mm-hmm.
That's the ideal that the human species goes for, because it wants to maximize the good outcomes for the children, and all the societies agree that that's a good way to do it.
Right.
So marriage is the name we give to that arrangement, whereby every child born has this mother and father caring for them, and so I really testified, and of course was challenged, and there was a big discussion of it at the trial, but that was the gist of it,
mm-hmm.
that marriage was not only for that purpose. There are plenty of other purposes of marriage, but that was a primary purpose.
Now, let me ask you one other kind of background question. You had founded the Institute for American Values in 1987. Had the Institute been addressing the issue of marriage equality during the years prior to 2012?
Well, not really, because when we started the organization, we felt that we wanted to stay away from certain kind of cultural hot-button issues.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was abortion. We did not want to take a position on abortion because we were trying to build a broad tent around the issue of marriage. And we also wanted to stay away from issues related to homosexuality mm-hmm. and gay rights because, we wanted to build a broad base of support for marriage and civil society. So, no, we didn't get involved in it. But then,
mm-hmm.
After a while, after the Massachusetts case in 2004, which was a real turning point in this whole issue that brought same-sex marriage into Massachusetts, I ended up writing a book called The Future of Marriage, where I did take a position against gay marriage, and then it was that book that was the basis of my testimony at the trial in California.
Okay. Well, we're going to get into the very important concrete details of the position in just a moment, but I'm also curious about the process of changing a fundamental position such as this one, because momentum can be a very powerful force indeed, both for individuals and for institutions. What did it take to point the ship in this new direction for you?
Well, I had always been of the opinion from the beginning that there were good reasons to be for gay marriage and there were good reasons to be against it.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that and still do. And so what caused me to shift to give greater emphasis to the reasons to be for it so that I thought the reasons to be for it were stronger than the reasons to be against it? That's really the change that happened for me. And what happened really, I know it may sound a little trite to some of your listeners, but the truth is I just got to know people. I began in a debating mode with some of the gay and lesbian leaders. You know, I would be in these debates around the country on gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
We would argue and argue and argue, but then afterwards, over time, I actually got to meet people. And one of them in particular, a fellow named Jonathan Rauch, who wrote a book called Gay Marriage, in favor of gay marriage. He's a gay writer. And we became friends. I got to know him, and we were able to talk carefully not only about this issue but about each other's lives. And I know it sounds a little maybe trite, because we intellectuals, we like to think that we live in our heads and it's all about our ideas and our readings and our reflections, but the truth of it is that for me, I didn't. You know, I was born in 1955. I'm from Mississippi. That's where I was born and raised. And I did not know much about gay people.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't. I just was all, you know, it was not discussed. When I was a kid, I learned ugly names to call.
Mm-hmm.
I learned these ugly words, and that was about it, really. And so getting to know people, getting to know their lives, getting to know their stories, getting to know the idea of what it meant to them to have a partner in life, a lover in life,
mm-hmm.
that was recognized as, you know, and for them to be recognized as being equal to others, it came to mean something to me that it did not mean when it was just kind of an intellectual thought.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And they would say, you know, these people would say to me, "Well, did you know about such and such a certain Supreme Court case?" And I would say, "Well, no, I didn't know anything about it." And they said, "Well, for us, this was very important because this was a precursor to where we are now." And I said, "Well, that case didn't have anything to do with marriage. I'm interested in marriage." And they said, "No, you don't understand. For us, this is a whole struggle to kind of enter into the American mainstream." And I didn't really know any of that. So it's not so much that I changed my mind about anything I thought about parenting and the traditional meaning of the institution. I still believe all that to be true and very, very important.
Yeah.
But I came to an appreciation that I didn't have before, that me personally, I'm not pointing a finger at others, I was not aware. I was not aware of the suffering going on here and
mm-hmm.
the need for change. I was not as aware as I should have been, and that's why I changed my position.
You know, David, I understand why you think our listeners and others might think that a trite statement, and I just have to tell you that I don't think there is anything near triteness about what you've said, because I believe that real change in us doesn't just happen in the head. It happens in experience. And
yes.
what you've said about your relationship with the homosexual community, it could be said about people trying to relate to members of another religion that they don't know. And the real change doesn't take place until we make ourselves vulnerable to a relationship. And then we discover, I mean, it's one thing to debate ideas. It's another to try to debate the value of a human being.
And I did not know that, really. I mean, as well as I should have. I was not, and this taught me a lesson. Here I am, a middle older man, and I learned something here.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel that, especially for those of us in the public eye, as you mentioned, there's a pressure to just stick with whatever you've said previously, and there's also we live in such an ugly, rancorous time that every, you know, you're supposed to just take a position and call the other side names, and that's that.
Yeah.
And but I there's also this kind of what I find, what you said that it's based also in the relationship and experience. I find that for people who have ideas, you know, you can develop a kind of tissue of belief, a kind of a tissue of doctrine or dogma or belief that stands between you and the other person.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of shields you from getting to know them as people and their own experience and being able to really relate, to walk a mile in their shoes and so forth. So I don't know if you've experienced that, but sometimes your theory or your formal, you know, your so-called position on the issue can be a barrier between you and other people.
See, I think that what you've just done is describe the solution to the rancorous society that we have because of diversity, and you've shown us the way in dealing with almost any issue, how you get through that. My guest is David Blankenhorn, founder of the Institute for American Values. We're talking about the Institute's call for moving the gay marriage debate out of the realm of the culture wars and engaging it in the service of strengthening marriage as an institution. David, we've talked about the complex mechanics of changing a position on a subject as emotionally charged as marriage. So we've covered the how. Now let's talk for a moment about the why. Why a quote, new conversation on marriage? Why?
Well, because the old conversation is at a dead end. For 10 years or more now, we have been almost entirely preoccupied with this rancorous argument over gay rights and gay marriage, and any time anybody says the word marriage, you can't take one more step before you're immediately embroiled in a debate about gay marriage. So number one, we need to refocus on the institution as a whole, and particularly since the institution is fracturing today along class lines. If you are among the upscale Americans who have four-year college degrees, that's about 30%.
Mm-hmm.
The marriage trends for that group are going pretty well. But if you were in the 60% of Americans who have high school degrees, but not four-year college degrees, that's 60% of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage is just deteriorating, almost evaporating before our eyes. More and more one-parent homes, more and more breakup, serial relationships, bruised lives, you know, cramped possibilities for thriving for many, many, many children, human suffering, and in the weakening of the family and marriage relationships in the broad middle of the country is contributing to inequality, and it's contributing to the division in our society that are so painful and so need to be fixed. And so we need to think about that. And so the argument that I am and my colleagues are making in this new conversation, which your listeners can sign up for today to be a part of, we are saying, let us stop arguing so much about gay versus straight or gay rights versus against gay rights. Let us, gays and straights who want to strengthen the institution for everyone, who want to leave it better off than they found it, we want to work together to strengthen marriage. And so we're putting the culture war over gay marriage behind us, and we are broadening the conversation to include gays and lesbians with everybody else who, but not just, but who want to strengthen marriage, who want to
right.
focus on the broad crisis that we face. So that's the gist of it. And
mm-hmm.
and I'll tell you, well, I mean, it's been encouraging. I mean, we're getting liberals and conservatives, gay and straight. I mean, people,
right.
there's a common sense to this that I think is appealing to people.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that, and I'm going to ask you again later, but tell our listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, how to do it.
Well, if you want to, you go to our website. It's AmericanValues.org, AmericanValues.org, and you can sign on to our, it's only 800 words, you know, so it's short, and it's called A Call for a New Conversation on Marriage. And you can read it, and you can become a signatory. And there are many distinguished Americans who have already signed this, and there are more signing every day. And we're going to go on around the country to talk about this over the next few months. We're going to have town hall meetings and various discussions, different leaders and people around the country. So this is going to be a serious effort to really reframe the discussion, you know, and just get us to a different place where we can focus on strengthening marriage for all who seek it. That's another way of saying it.
Yeah, and I think that is so important that people understand not only are you challenging something that's wrong about our perspective, you're also modeling the way to get beyond that, because I see a kind of narrow sectarian doctrine divorced from compassion, and a kind of partisan political position, again divorced from compassion, that doesn't give people room to change. You're saying you want good marriages for everybody.
Everybody who wants them, yes.
Right.
In particular, you know, I mean, the kind of almost in a humorous way, my colleagues and I have been saying, okay, if you're a liberal, do you believe in strengthening marriage? Do you believe in marriage even if the word gay is not in front of it?
Mm-hmm.
That's one way to ask the question.
That's right.
If you're a conservative and you think you're pro-family, are you pro-family enough to break bread with gay and lesbians, people who are also pro-family? Are you that pro-family?
Yeah.
Or not? And if you're gay or lesbian, are you only interested in the right of access to the institution? Or would you also like to leave the institution better off than you found it through your participation in it and through your stewardship? Now, that's also an interesting question. And so whether you're gay or straight, whether you're liberal or conservative, there's a opportunity here to come together and do and have everybody do better than we've done,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the past. Because goodness knows, you know this well, but I mean, we have not treated the institution well as a society
right.
in recent decades,
yeah.
you know. And, yeah. and of course, this is all the result of heterosexual people doing
mm-hmm.
this. So, but we've not treated the institution well. We haven't respected it. And so that's the reframing that we're looking at here, and the broader conversation, the bringing together of a broader group that can say, let's turn that trend around. Turn that trend around and leave this institution a little bit better off 10 years from now than it is now.
Boy, I mean, those are such exciting questions, to have a dialogue around those would be incredible. And I think, David, that what you and your colleagues are doing, which I totally support, is on the one hand, you're challenging us to see if we really are importantly focused on marriage or just one kind of marriage. And secondly, you're offering the kind of compassion that moves us to engage with new people and to get out of our biases and to get into a form of loving relationships that we haven't yet tried.
Yes, and that's true. It's what I found that I wanted to try to do. So I'm trying to do the same thing. You know?
I'm so glad. I've been talking with David Blankenhorn, founder of the Institute for American Values. He is aggressively working to strengthen the institution of marriage for all. How could you be against that? By removing the issue of gay marriage from the battlefield of the culture wars in this country. I think David is calling our bluff. David Blankenhorn is the author of numerous books on culture and values, including several on the institution of marriage. In an age of entrenched partisan polarization on so many issues, it's a heartening thing to look at some of the very real problems in our society in an honest way and in a hopeful way, and that's what Mr. Blankenhorn is doing. I want to thank him for taking time to be with us today. I want to encourage you to find out more about him. David, one more time, the contact information.
It's www.AmericanValues, that's one word, AmericanValues.org, and you can read the call for a new conversation to sign up and get email notices of future conversations, and we really welcome that, and thank you, Welton, for the great work that you're doing.
Well, listen, thanks for taking time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you.